more about labyrinths as a pathway to peace. So we'll explore that theme in just a moment.
Pictures. I want you to have them. Oh, do you want, you need to?
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm going to close this. So welcome, everyone. It's so nice to see your faces, some familiar faces that I met on Friday, which was such a nice thing to get to know some of your congregation on Friday night with the event that Caroline. I want to thank Caroline for bringing me here. She's a friend of my sister's, and we made the Labyrinth connection a little while ago. We celebrated World Labyrinth Day on your labyrinth out there yesterday. It was a wonderful event, and I'll get to that a little bit later. My name is Ellen Benz-Vivoda, and I am the global coordinator for World Labyrinth Day. This was my fifth year of doing it, and I'm passing the torch. So that was my swan song this year, and moving on to other things. And I wanted to give you the title of what I was talking about is The Path to Contemplative Labyrinth Activism. And that is my passion, is working with a collective. I really enjoy quantum physics and the power of the collective and the integration of physics and science with the spirit and spirituality. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think they work together beautifully. And I would love to dispel the myth that they are two separate things. I don't think that they are. So just to give you a brief history, my labyrinth work began in 2001 with inmates. And that really is my passion population. I love working with inmates. And I'm very passionate about that. Unfortunately, that program was stopped by our county jail. I'm from Chicago, Illinois, outside in Wheaton, Illinois. It's 30 miles west of the city. DuPage County is the county we're in, and it is the second largest county in Illinois. So the jail is the second largest jail in Illinois. I worked in that capacity for 5 years. And it was a volunteer position, bringing the labyrinth in. And because at the time, there just wasn't anybody in the world who had an ongoing program, I, by default, became the person that people would call to ask how to create a program within a secured facility. And I've helped people all over the world get labyrinths in Ireland, England, Germany, San Quentin, Boston, some other places too. And I love that work. While that was going on, I trained in 2001, right before 9/11. And in fact, was supposed to go back to San Francisco, where I trained at Grace Cathedral. Lauren Artress was stationed there, and she was the person who brought back the labyrinth movement from Chartres Cathedral in France. Read the book, Walking a Sacred Path, if you want to know more about that, that she wrote. In June, there was supposed to be a reunion in September, and we couldn't go because of 9/11, coincided with that. And as a new facilitator, I watched what was happening in the world, and I watched the labyrinth community, and they responded. Everybody did their own thing, but there wasn't a unified response. And so I started developing an idea that the labyrinth community could come together in emergencies and disasters and have a unified plan, very simple, like a fire escape plan for a family. It's not something that we needed to dwell on. We just had to have it available when it was necessary. So I created a program called the Global Healing Response for the Labyrinth, for the Global Labyrinth community. And I did not know, by the time I finally introduced it to the Labyrinth community, it was 2 weeks before Hurricane Katrina. I had no idea I was going to be implementing it in 2 weeks. So we did. People opened their labyrinths all over the world, and we have a unified, it's very simple. It's a simple but profound program that anybody could pick up and use. We have a unified prayer. We do it on the same day, hopefully at the same time around the world. And I create materials kind of like a Sunday school lesson. If you've ever taught Sunday school, you know, you get that one sheet that tells you what to do. So in the time since 2005, we've responded to over 19 disasters and tsunamis, earthquakes, all of that. Now, if you think the world hasn't changed, I can attest that it has, because we used to be able to do an emergency every once in a while, and then all of a sudden they started coming faster and more frequently, and we just couldn't respond to everything with the impact that we wanted to. So a wonderful woman, Joanne Mast, who is the late Joanne Mast, she was fabulous, suggested to me and helped me create the Global Healing Resources, which is an ongoing program. And we have a theme for the year, and each quarter is a different focus. And it's the same thing, like a Sunday school lesson, where we have a unified prayer, and an image, a color, a quote. It's all on the globalhealingresponse.com. It can be used in different healing modalities, and that was my intention, but it has been used mainly by the Labyrinth community. So if, in essence, if all of the Labyrinth facilitators in the world, which is over 5,000 people, were to do a walk during each of these quarters, it would be impactful as far as collective healing goes, which is what I'm going to talk about in a little while. So around, also I just wanted to tell you that this year's theme is authenticity. The first quarter was groundedness, and the second quarter is grit. I spend quite a bit of time figuring out what the next year's theme is going to be. In meditation, in listening, in talking to people, and I don't take any credit for it. It's something that I feel is, you know, given to me, and I try to pay attention, but it's amazing how each year it seems pretty germane what the topics are. If you want to learn more about grit, I also have a podcast, a weekly podcast, with a friend from England, UK, where we give views from the US and the UK, and I have cards. We did, one of my favorite episodes is the one we did on grit, if you want to focus a little bit more on that. But I have cards to get you to the podcast. So I guess what I'm trying to tell you is that I really enjoy working globally and understanding that it is a small world and we are all connected. So from 2005 to 2019, I was just doing this work, but then I started wondering, why does this work? Why is this so impactful to people, the responses I would get? And I learned it was more impactful to the people who were doing the walks, actually, than to the victims of the people. We learned early on not to involve the victims. Like in Katrina, we involved the people who were affected to help us plan, and that's the wrong thing. They're in their space, and they're not ready to help with it. So I started studying collective healing. And I went to ION's, Institute of Noetic Sciences, website. They have quite a bit of information about community healing. There's so many names for this. And I started learning about, I've always loved physics, but I started learning about the quantum physics of this. We're all connected. That's what, you know, they're finding out. Everything is connected, quantum entanglement. Non-locality, doesn't matter where you are in the world. You still affect each other. And it's really, really fascinating. So if you think about 2019, that was right before COVID, right? So I was very fascinated by our gatherings and how much power is in us being together. Even, you know, when you're in church together, there's a power in that. And they've proven that scientifically. So then COVID hit. And we weren't together. We were separate. We were disconnected. And I think we all, maybe we couldn't articulate it, or maybe we have, that we felt disconnected. And I was with somebody yesterday who said, what happened to the world then? And because I think that universal power is so important, it's exponentially more powerful for us to be together than to be disconnected. I think we felt all our energy just go down, right? And we're in a place now that's probably still affected by that. So that is my passion, to get people excited about and to know the power of gathering and the power of us being together. And the labyrinth has been used for personal transformation, and that's great. Don't stop. That's wonderful to walk the labyrinth. And how many people here have walked the labyrinth outside? You're all familiar. I didn't do Labyrinth 101 because I assumed that Caroline and her group have already done that and are you're familiar with it. You all know that it can be a great place to find peace and focus and even have your questions answered, or grief integration. It can be used in so many ways personally. But I feel, and luckily I found other people who do too, that maybe there's another way to use the labyrinth too, that we can add to, not exclude, add to how we use the labyrinth, and that's collectively. With intention, which is an important piece, and with coherence. So I think that's why they asked me to be the coordinator of World Labyrinth Day, because I had been doing this work and I was interested in being global. So in 2021, I took that over. As I said, this is my fifth year. I took it over with the caveat that they would allow me to collaborate with the other labyrinth organizations. The Labyrinth Society founded World Labyrinth Day, and I thought it was important to bring in all the labyrinth organizations because it seemed a little silly to celebrate World Labyrinth Day and not be united, which unfortunately they weren't. So we did that. It wasn't easy, but we did that, and it's grown. I wanted to give you some stats. In 2024, we had 6 out of 7 continents. We couldn't get Antarctica, and we still couldn't this year, and that was my goal before I left, to get Antarctica, but we couldn't. We had 26 countries last year. We had over 30 this year. We have over 400 events registered. Last year, we had 300 events. We've worked really hard to make it global by translating into 15 languages our materials, by offering pre-World Labyrinth Day events at 2 different times to cover all 24 time zones. For World Labyrinth Day, we start at 1 o'clock wherever you are. So New Zealand starts at 1 p.m. and they walk. So wherever you are, you walk at 1 p.m. That's what we did yesterday. So there is a wave of peace that goes around the world. And we covered 20 time zones. So that's pretty good. Instead of going with continents, I decided to talk about the time zones. I felt it was a little more successful. And I love it so much because it shows that the world can come together. And I've created photo montages from 2022, 23, and 24. If you can go to the worldlabyrinthday.org website, you can watch. And I've not known anybody who hasn't watched and gotten emotional, because you see everyone around the world coming together and walking. So we can do it. It's a day where we show that we can all come together for peace and love and unity. So at the same time that I became the coordinator for World Labyrinth Day, the Legacy Labyrinth Project asked me to be on their board. They were also interested in collective healing and intention. And we, Legacy Labyrinth Project, creates or dedicates labyrinths. We have 10 legacy labyrinths that are very intentional. energetically, I do feel all labyrinths are connected. Many people do, but in the legacy labyrinths, we are very intentional about it. It's kind of like the difference between just people and family. So our network is, we give it a lot of attention. All the materials are shared in every one of the labyrinths. We support the people who have the legacy labyrinths, and they each have their own intention for healing. We just dedicated one in Newfoundland that was for the ocean and our environment. We have one that is for unconditional love. You get the idea. So we have another one. We're just about to dedicate one in Montreal. And they have a large homeless population that actually uses the labyrinth and might even stay on the labyrinth. And we're dedicating it to resources for the underserved. Well, we also do research at the Legacy Labyrinth Project. And Chris Katzenmeier, who's the director, was talking about a research project she wanted to do in collaboration with Baylor University. And I had just become the World Labyrinth Day coordinator, and I said, would you want to do it on World Labyrinth Day? And she said, do you think we can do that? I said, I think we can, because I'm the coordinator. So we did, and Baylor put the information together. It was very appropriately done. It's actually been published in Frontiers in Psychology. And the information we received from that research, as far as intention, everyone was given the same intention. They were asked how they felt afterward, walking collectively with people on World Labyrinth Day. And what they found was, of course, they felt interconnections. They had perceptions of sacred experiences, and they had deep insights. Many people were led to action after they walked the labyrinth with this thought for social peace and world peace. It's a really interesting article. If you have time to read it, again, you can find it on the Legacy Labyrinth Project website. So with this information, with my passions, we created something called Contemplative Labyrinth Activism. Got a little heat for the word activism in the beginning, but we don't get so much heat anymore because we've explained it well. I don't know if you're familiar with Richard Rohr, who talks about contemplative activism, Andrew Harvey, who talks about sacred activism. Along those lines, there are other people too. There's a difference between contemplative activism and our traditional activism. We are heart-centered. There's a place for both of them. One is not bad and one is not good. I consider it more for, there are a lot of people who aren't comfortable with traditional activism, and contemplative activism is something they feel like they can do. And acknowledging the science behind, as I was telling you, the collective, and I'll get into in a minute, it can be really powerful in this world. And so they both have their place. But the difference, there are differences, but they overlap. Neither one shies away from controversial issues. Both want to see change. Both use collective energy. And both are motivated by change. So I just want to be sure to say that I don't think one is bad and one is good. They're just different uses. So as I said, we use a lot of information to evolve in this new concept. And I want to tell you that we're very mindful and very careful. We know this is, we let it emerge. We are not the kings and queens of this theory. We listen, we change, we adapt, we learn what works and what doesn't over the past couple years as we've started this. So anybody familiar with HeartMath Institute? We use a lot of information from that organization. They've done wonderful research about the power of the electromagnetic field that comes from your heart and coherence and how that affects the energy of the world. I highly recommend visiting HeartMath Institute if you can. It's really fascinating. It's the blend of spirit and science that I was talking about, although they're very scientific. We also use Lynn McTaggart's intention work. Anybody familiar with Lynn McTaggart? The field, the power of eight. And then I said the Institute of Noetic Science and many others too. So what is contemplative labyrinth activism? Well, the process that we have come up with, and as I said, we are willing to morph and change, but we find this to be the most effective right now, involves first being coherent. And coherent, and this is where I wish I had the PowerPoint to show you the difference between coherent energy and incoherent energy. But I think you can imagine, coherent energy is, you know, equidistance lines, incoherent energy is all messy. Well, scientifically, the emotions of love, forgiveness, grace, compassion are associated with coherence. When you're in coherence, when you're focused, when you're at peace. Incoherence is anxiety, judgment, anger, fear. Again, we all experience both of these. They're not good or bad. We're all going to be in each one of these. I don't want to make you think that incoherence is bad. However, the HeartMath Institute has coined a term that we're all energetically responsible for the energy we put out into the world. Energetic responsibility. If you don't take anything else away today, I hope you take that away. Energetic responsibility. What we need to know is that if we have a tantrum, which we all have those moments, we come down into those lower energy, that goes out into the world, that affects the field. And some people will say, what are you putting out in the field today, the energetic field? So just think about that, and it stays there. The analogy I like to use is like a star. When a star dies and we look up in the sky, we still see it, right? A million years later, it's still there. Now there are ways that we can transform, and we know that. We know that intuitively, that we can help people become coherent. And HeartMath Institute, one of their most famous scientific research projects was they put three people in a room who were coherent and entrained. Is when one person is coherent, that's coherence. When people come together and are coherent together, maybe share, care about each other, however, are connected, that's called entrainment. And you bring in a fourth person who is maybe upset, not vibrating at a highest level, it doesn't take very long for them to become coherent, to have the same heart energy that the three people do. And that's been scientifically proven over and over again. So the first step in contemplative labyrinth activism is your individual coherence. The second step is intention, and the third step is action. So we're learning a lot about intention. Intention setting is hard. It doesn't, you know, it's simple but hard, right? You want to intend for the highest good. You have to intend for the highest good. I'm not talking about intending for a new car or, you know, $500. That's not the kind of intention we're talking about when we do this. And sometimes you have your own stuff that gets mixed up in there, and so that's where I think the biggest challenge is to keeping your intentions for the highest good. And then we walk together with that intention that we've set, created, together. And just the suggestion we make to people is to repeat the intention when you walk in, and in the center, release it as if it has already happened, picturing it that it's already happened, and walking out with the feeling that that intention that we have set as a group has happened. And I guess that's critical for intention setting. If you, Greg Braden, anybody familiar with Greg Braden's work, or Joe Dispenza, they're also very literate about this topic. So as I talked about before, I just want to define a couple terms. The unified field is the field where we're all connected. And I know you guys even feel that in this church, right? You can feel the connection that you all have. And acknowledging that all forces of nature
are understood to be one.
That's a scientific fact, and they're finding more and more. It's really exciting, the research they're finding that is proving this theory. And as I talked about the difference between coherence and incoherence, an example I like to give, the light from a light bulb is actually incoherent light. The filaments are all, you've seen that in there. And it gives off light, right? But coherent light is a laser. And we know what a laser can do. And that's how you can think of it in your head, the difference between being in a state of love and being in a state of fear. That's the difference in the power. There is power in love. It's not a cliche, it's a scientific fact that when we're coherent and our energy is extending further when we're coherent in those fields, we actually affect a larger circle around us when we are in coherence. Again, HeartMath Institute to read more about that. The analogy I like to use about the three-step program about being individually coherent, collectively coherent, and then sending out the energy is like a symphony. People who are learning an instrument have to do that on their own, alone. It's your responsibility to be coherent. No one can help you. Your responsibility of where you want to be. You have to learn your instrument by yourself, right? Sitting in the room, practicing. And then you come to your group, your symphony, and there are a lot of different instruments, and even some of the same instruments have different music, but they have to learn how to play together, and they practice, and they rehearse before they can have that energy to send out at the symphony, that beautiful symphony that I think we've all experienced, the power of music and what we feel. There's a term called collective effervescence that I love. Have you heard that? You've heard that. I just love that term. It's kind of like the power that is effused from a symphony, that you feel the movement and you feel emotional. It's also at a football game when your team scores and everybody stands up. Have you ever been walking away from a stadium and somebody scores and you're like, what was that? That's collective effervescence. That's power. There's power in that. So there's a term that says small islands of coherence in a sea of chaos can shift the whole system to a higher order. Sitting right here, we're a small island of coherence. We do have power to shift the whole system. It's amazing how few people it takes. And I wanted to talk about, anybody familiar with the Maharishi effect? It was an experiment that actually happened in Washington, D.C. in 1993. They brought in, I think, like 2,000 meditators. And they did this in a very scientific way. They collaborated with the police and all the different organizations. They expected the meditators sitting there in coherent energy, as I've talked about, to decrease crime. It was, I guess that was a bad crime year in 1993, by 20%. It actually decreased by 25%. And this experiment has been duplicated 7 times in the Israel-Lebanon war. And they got the same results. They were able to quantify what size of a population was needed in order to affect the change. And this is also where I wish I had, because it's pretty impactful when you see the picture, but try to imagine this in your head. It's the square root of 1% of the population is needed to affect change in the area that they're in. So to put that in simple numbers, if there are 900 people, 1% is 9, and the square root of that is 3. So 3 people who come together in coherence. This experiment did not involve intention. In fact, that's it's been criticized for that. They didn't even have that aspect to it. They just came together individually meditating. But it takes 3 people to affect 900 people. They have the power to make energetic change in the world. I find that incredibly hopeful. And I feel like if everybody knew that, if everybody knew it does make a difference, maybe everyone else would be hopeful too. So that means it would take a little over 1,800 people to influence the United States. And it would take 8,800 people to influence the world. That could be done. I was telling Caroline, side note, off the record, there are governments who have researched this and who know this too. They've used it in, I hope, good ways, but this is a well-known effect. Also, an interesting thing to this is called the mirror effect. When you participate in this, when you're coherent, when you enter in a group, when you send out peace to the world, we all have a torus field around us. It's like a donut. And when you send it out, it comes back to you. You've probably seen pictures of this, of the torus field that's around all of us. It's an we give off electromagnetic field, and that electromagnetic field is like a donut. So when you send it out, it comes back to you. That's just a benefit. It shouldn't be what motivates us, right? But it's kind of fun to know that that's what they've found out. People who send out peace end up, their life ends up being more peaceful too. They send out healing, they end up being healed too. I think that's fascinating. 2 minutes. Okay, I'm almost done. So, yeah, actually, in conclusion, I think you can tell I find the idea of collective healing on the labyrinth, using the labyrinth, but maybe adapting it to a healing tool that you use, or however you find it. I personally use the labyrinth, can be powerful in the world. And I think it's, we've gone beyond the need. We need individual healing, but I think we need this exponential collective healing in order for us to move to a different place in the world. So grab a friend or a couple friends, create a circle, maybe create an intention for someone, and walk the labyrinth and see what happens. And I'd love to hear from you. I also have some handouts over here that talk about, if you're interested in joining in learning more. I've only covered the surface on collective labyrinth activism. And also, I have some cards for my podcast if you're interested in learning about grit. Thank you for having me. I'm going to welcome Caroline up. She's going to do our closing prayer. And I so appreciate being able to talk to you.
This is really aimed at the people that are considering walking the labyrinth. May the joy of the journey be yours. May love companion you every step of the way. May the path lead you safely home. Amen.